Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello, and you're very welcome along to a bonus episode of Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness and here on Joe. We've got a couple of interviews for you today. First one we have is Jack O'Toole from Sports Joe. He went along to talk to Ulster and Ireland winger Jacob Stockdale, who's a Maxall ambassador. So we've got that one for you. And then we're going to go back to the archives and have a classic Trimby interview with Brian O'Driscoll and Tana Umaga. So I hope you enjoy the two of them. And first up, it's Jack O'Toole talking to Jacob Stockdale.
Jacob, I'll probably start with, I was talking to Derek Suffren, your school coach, and he was kind of saying that when you came through school, you were like a second rower, then you went to the back rower, and then you went out into the backs and centres one season. And then I think towards the end of school, you just kind of like took off. Like, he said there was one summer in particular, you just came back and you were like almost a different player. Like, can you remember what that summer was? Like,
yeah, it was, you know, the difference. It was kind of that summer in between my fifth year and my lower sixth year. There was a couple of things that happened the rest of the summer, you know, like I got a bit of a growth spurt and, you know, kind of filled out a wee bit, so I was a bit more confident, you know, in my size and my ability. And I don't know, I just trained, had a real good training kind of pre-season, you know, school pre-season. And in fairness, you know, Suff, you know, put that confidence in me and gave me the opportunity to start for the firsts. All of a sudden I was... I was playing for the first, and which was quite a strange experience for me because, you know, it's something that I'd never really expected, and yeah, it just kind of went on from there.
Yeah, you said like once you just started like kind of doing what you're doing now, it's sometimes where you might get the ball from like 50, 60 metres out and you get half a gap and you're kind of gone. Like, he said he started to base a lot more plays around you. Like, he was obviously that kind of confidence kind of gave you the belief to kind of really start pick up and going pretty quickly.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he was like I said, you know, he did put an awful lot of confidence in me and an awful lot of belief in me, and because of the belief he was putting in me, it allowed me to be more confident on the pitch, and, you know, I kind of went for more things and more things came off, that's how it kind of came about. And yeah, like, you know, looking back, you know, if he hadn't have done that, I maybe never would have played, you know, professional rugby, and so I kind of had to owe him a lot.
Because I suppose, like, over the last couple of years, with how quickly things have gone for Ulster and Ireland, that everyone's kind of said how far you've risen. But I suppose even at school, it kind of happened to you quite quickly as well. Like, were Ulster ever in touch, like, when you were kind of 15, 16, or was it only in that, like, towards the very end of school? Like, when did you first hear from the academy?
I didn't hear from Ulster, you know, when I was 15 or 16.
Yeah.
I was playing for the, you know, the Bs and the thirds and the fourths and stuff, but... Yeah, it was whenever, you know, my lower sixth year, at the end of that, you know, I had a decent schools cup and I was asked to come and play for the Ulster under-18s and, you know, did that, and then the next year played for Irish schools and that went well, and then I was offered an academy contract, you know, just after the schools cup my upper sixth year, you know, so it all came in really, really quickly, and, you know, in those kind of, those days, like, Yeah, it was brilliant. It was really, really fun.
How were those first 2 years in the academy? I think I remember reading that you put on something like maybe 13, 14 kilos. Like, I mean, the physical adjustment is obviously, is that something that they bred into you, or was that something that you wanted to, maybe thinking you're going to step up to the pros, wanting to kind of put on maybe as much size to prepare?
Yeah, like I was injured for actually a good bit of my like kind of academy career. In my first year, I had like, a groin injury and broke my ankle and tore ligaments in my ankle and things like that, and the S&C staff were kind of just like, right, let's just see how big we can get you while you're injured. I went into the academy 93-94 kilos, which is heavy enough for a schoolboy. I went to the World Cup that year 107. But I was far too heavy and I was far too fat, so I trimmed down. So the next year I kind of trimmed down to about 102, and I've kind of sat at that since, because that's where I felt like most comfortable, you know.
Yeah, I think Johnny Davis was saying Craig Gilroy did something similar, like, I think he put on like 10 kilos and then eventually kind of reverted back like 4 or 5 kilos. It seems everyone kind of like, maybe, I don't know if it's a winger thing or maybe just people want to put size on it and they eventually kind of find a happy medium where they're,
I think,
where
when,
they're good with it.
When you're young and you come out of school, you expect, you know, bigger is better, and, you know, you need to be, like, the bigger you are, the more tackles you're going to break, and a lot of time it's not, you know, it's about being more powerful and fitter, and do you know what I mean? Like, if I can stay at, you know, if I can, like, in the middle of a game, if I'm at 80% of my max, you know, fitness, you know, I'm going to be able to do more damage than somebody who's 10 kilos heavier but's at like 30% of their max fitness, you know. So yes, like, I think what I learned from that was just that everybody's different, and you know, that, you know, being 100 and something kilos might work for, you know, Nandolo, but it's not gonna work for me, unfortunately, you know. So yeah, it's just about finding what, you know, what's best for me.
Yeah, each their own. I suppose when you did come in, like, it's pretty loaded backfield with the likes of Payne and Charles Pieteau and Ludic Bow, Trimble. Like, there's a lot of people that were kind of in there. I was talking to Tommy and Andrew, and they just said that they, you were kind of like soaking everything up almost, like looking for little nuggets or doing maybe sidestepping drills with Charles, or maybe doing some high ball stuff with Tommy Bow. Like, I mean, having that kind of core group of players there, really experienced, you know, Lions players even, you must have just been soaking it up as soon as you got in. Like,
yeah, it was. I suppose I was quite lucky in the sense that I had those kind of like world-class players to learn off, you know, my first couple of years. And it was good in the sense that, like, each one of them had something different. You know, Charles was out and out attack, you know, great feet, you know, could tell you what he was looking for in attack. You know, Tommy, obviously great in the air. Trimby and Jared, both great defenders. And, you know, you just had, like, this, like, literally like a coaching staff, you know, of players there. And yeah, and, you know, I've learned from a fairly young age that, like, the way to get better was to learn off these boys. And you know, that's what I tried to do. I'm still trying to do that, you know, in Ireland camp with Earlsey and Rob Carney, you know, guys like that, that, you know, you can learn off in that way.
Is it just like positioning stuff? Like, because I can imagine, like, say if you'd only kind of made the transition to wing really in your academy or days, or maybe even sometimes at Wallace, like, I'm sure there's still a lot positionally about the position that you were trying to, like, grasp, because especially if you're playing as a forward in your younger years, like, it's a bit of a transition.
Yeah, definitely. It was something that, like, I did have to learn pretty quickly, and, you know, it was probably the weakest part of my game for a good while, and, you know, it might still be, but, you know, it's something that, because it was the weakest part of my game, I wanted to work on it as hard as I could, you know, and turn it into a bit of a strength, which, you know, I think I'm starting to do. I'm definitely still not, you know, finished product, not anywhere near it, but, you know, I'm getting there.
Yeah, Trimby was saying that at the 2017 Ireland tour was a bit of a turning point for you, because I suppose you'd been kind of maybe in and out in the Ulster squad, maybe a couple of bench appearances, and then you went on that Irish tour, and then he said, like, they were all doing pre-season and for 3 or 4 weeks, and he said you came back and you were, like, fitter and faster, and you were, like, and then you pretty much just hit the ground running then from there. Like, what was about that summer, maybe that USA and Japan tour, or maybe that whole summer, that was just maybe a bit of a turning point?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously kind of before that, like, I'd been on the bench, you know, behind, like, Trimby and Tommy, and, you know, that, I think that was a really good experience for me, just to kind of get a taste for professional rugby but not get thrown in the deep end. You know, I think I was quite lucky in that sense. Obviously, look, you know, at the time I was real frustrated because I was like, I want to be starting ahead of these boys, but looking back, it was probably a really good thing for me. And then, yeah, going on that Ireland tour, it just gave me a lot of confidence and gave me a taste of what, you know, kind of the level above Ulster was like, and I felt like I handled it pretty well. So I was like, yeah, I can go back to Ulster here and you know, work hard and do well. And yeah, I did a bit of work while I was off and came back in nice and fit and felt good. And yeah, I don't know, it just kind of went from there, I guess.
Was there any specifically that you're working on? Like, either, I don't know, maybe speed or strength, like, or was there anything over that summer that you were looking at when you said work?
Just keep my fitness up, because the year before that I'd come in and I hadn't done any work in my off season, and I felt horrendous. Like, you know, I felt real fat and slow, and I could barely, like, after the first day of training, I could barely walk, and I was like, right, I'm learning my lessons from that, you know, make sure next time I come in I'm going to be in decent nick, and I managed to do it. Like,
yeah, obviously that, from that season on, you've the dream season, and you come in the last summer, but then I'm sure you had a good summer, but, like, last, you come in with a hamstring injury during the pre-season, and you missed the first couple of games. Like, did you feel like that was, like, a disruption, because you'd had such an incredible year, and you're like, okay, here we back to square one in rehab. Like, I'm sure that set you back for a couple of weeks.
Partly, yeah. Like, it was frustrating to get that injury, because, you know, yeah, like you said, I had such a good season, you know, that season leading up, and yeah, I felt like I wasn't able to perform at my best in the Australia tour, particularly just because, you know, I was carrying this injury in my hamstring, and it just didn't feel right. But it's funny, actually, because it's such a long season, and to do a tour after that, and then you've got 5 weeks and you're straight into the start of the season again. Mm. Like I felt like I was a wee bit burnt out, you know, and especially just because it was my first season as well. I wasn't used to playing that many games. And just mentally, I felt a wee bit burnt out. So to be honest, the hamstring injury and mentally probably was quite a good thing for me because, you know, missing out on a couple of games, you come back in and you're dead hungry. All you want to do is play rugby again, you know, and that's how I felt coming back into it. So I suppose in that sense, it was good. You know, in a physical sense, it was frustrating because you never want to be injured, you know.
Yeah, but I suppose there is this natural trepidation where you're like, I suppose anyone that goes through an injury where you're like, oh, is it going to hold up the entire time? And then you come up against Connacht and you get that try. I think Kaelin goes up for a ball and you just kind of come in behind.
Yeah.
You were alive to the ball, but still, but you get the try from there. And I just kind of wondered, was that a moment that kind of like, okay, maybe gets the ball rolling again? Because I think after that, I think he did like, isn't he, something like 7 tries in 7 games? Like, he just kind of went right back to that.
Yeah,
that kind of where you picked off.
Yeah, obviously, you know, you're injured for a while, and you come back in, and you go like, am I going to be able, you know, like, is it going to be exactly the same? And especially because the season before that was my first season, where like I had really nothing to fall back on and be like, oh well, like, you know, I've done it all before.
Mm.
So yeah, that was tricky for me. So it was, once you get back out on the pitch and, you know, you get the ball in hands for the first time and you score a try, like, you just feel like you're straight back in the swing of things and you don't really need to worry about it in that sense.
Are you looking more like for those aerial challenges? Like, because I think you might have called that one, but I noticed as well, I think Grassing, you got a crossfield kick try. I think Scarlett's, you got a chip and chase, or someone, it was a nice little chip through that you kind of got on the end of. Like, is that you calling for it off, maybe, if it's Johnny or Billy? Or like, is that something that you've become maybe looking to more attack air?
As a winger, I think all wingers are always looking for that, you know, and especially if you feel like you're dominant in the air against your opposite man, you're going to call for it. It's tricky in the left wing because tens are all generally right-footed and they don't want to kick across themselves, you know, because it gives defenders more time to charge them down.
Of course.
The fortunate thing about Billy is that Billy's a very natural kind of footballer style kicker, so he can just drop the ball into his foot ridiculously quickly and hit it, which is class, you know, because then on both wings you're getting these, you know, kick plays and you're scoring off them, you know. Like, Johnny would be a bit more like deliberate in his kicking, so you generally tend not to get, you know, crossfields and kicks onto the left wing, which is, you know, understandable. It's interesting, like, just with the style of Billy, the style in which Billy kicks the ball meant that, like, I was getting more opportunities to get on the end of kicks.
Yeah, but is that something that you're just kind of like having to read off him, or are you like actively calling it? Like, is he hearing you when you're kind of making calls, or are you just kind of responding to him?
A bit of both. You know, sometimes you're going, look, I'm on here, hit me the ball. Sometimes, you know, you just kind of look at each other and then you realise what he's about to do and you just chase it, you know?
So, nice. Both. The other type of try you've been scoring is been a couple. Like, I know you've got like a couple against like Scotland and Argentina, which are kind of like offset plays, but against like the Scarlets, I suppose even the Leinster one, I know you didn't finish it, but the Italy one as well, it's like you get the ball on like the left wing and you're in that kind of like little 5 meter train track channel, and it's like if you kind of make one person miss or you get one fend, it's like you're gone for the races. Like, you've been scoring like a bit of these tries. Like, is that all you're kind of looking for when you're that fend out? Like, if I can just get on the outside of someone here, there's a good chance I might be able to go all the way.
Yeah, jeez. Somebody's getting killed up there.
yeah. Murder, She Wrote upstairs.
Yeah, no, jeez, yeah. But, it's like whenever you're a winger, like, you get the ball, like, all you're trying to do is score. Like, do you know what I mean? It's, like, as long as you can get the ball in your hands and get an opportunity to get to the line, like, that's all you can ask for. And, yeah, like, once you beat that first defender, it makes it a lot easier because you're then for the next defender, you're already rolling, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's not really something that I've tried to plan to do. It's just
right.
You just, you know, whenever you get the ball, you want to beat as many defenders as you can and try and score. And yeah, that's the kind of what I'm trying to do there.
Yeah, of course. I think one of the other things you were saying was with, like, even it was last November, was like doing some work with Andy Farrell. Like, even from the start of a November series to the end, you felt like you'd like immediately improve. Like, when you're working with guys like Faz and Smith, is like, I mean, they're such high level coaches. Is that almost like every time you go to an Ireland camp, you feel like there's little kind of twinges or tweaks to your game that is, you're noticing that are improving over 3 or 4 weeks?
Yeah, definitely. You know, they just make you think about things that you wouldn't normally think about, you know, in your province. And that's nothing on, you know, like Jared or Dan McFarland, you know, because basically they have to prepare for a new game every single week, and they can't focus on tiny details, whereas, you know, Joe and Faz, like, are, you know, they're focusing on, you know, let's say three games for, you know, 6 months, and they have every single detail, you know, down to a T about what they want from their players, and, you know, so they're able to kind of communicate that to you and show you exactly what they want and what they're thinking about. And yeah, it does, I think it definitely makes you a better player.
With Dan and Jared, like, I suppose at the start of last, or maybe the start before that last season, there's a bit of confusion over Dan, like, when's he going to be here? Is he going to be here in January, or like what's happening with the situation? But he comes in, I know it probably didn't end the way you wanted in Glasgow, but you make a Champions Cup quarter final, you're in the semi-finals of the Pro 14. Like, for a first season, you must be happy with it overall, I suppose.
Yeah, like you said, it's not the way you want to finish it off. Like, it was a bit of a disappointing way to finish, but at the same time, it was nobody expected us to do what we did, and it was great experience for younger lads. You know, you look at, you know, your Michael Lowry's, your Eric O'Sullivan's, your Robert Balakins. You know, those are guys that hadn't even played for Ulster last season, and you know, this season they've had a full season of rugby and have played in three playoff games, you know, and that's, as a rugby player, like, that's invaluable to get playing those big games. And, you know, even for guys like myself, that was the first knockout game I've played for Ulster, you know, and, you know, to be able to do that and get the opportunity to do that is great experience. And obviously moving forward, you know, you want a squad of guys that have played in a handful of knockout games, and that's how you win, you know, semi-finals and finals, not just quarter-finals.
It is a young group, though, which probably gives you a promise. Like, I know Bestie's 36 or whatever, but I think after that, it's like, it's Hendy and Geordie Murphy, maybe, 27, 28. Like,
exactly,
not,
yeah.
It is a pretty young group, which gives you promise, you can think, for the next couple of seasons if you keep people together. Like,
yeah, it's great. You know, we've kind of got that general spine of a team now, where, you know, you're looking at guys and you're going, right, these are going to be guys that are going to be playing for the next 5 or 6 years. And then, obviously, you know, I think we've made good signings for next season. You know, Jack McGrath coming in, he's a Lion, you know, really high-quality player. And, you know, Sam Carter from the Brumbies, like, again, another brilliant player, brings a good bit of experience with him. So, yeah, I think, you know, we've got that spine of the team now, and we're getting it bolstered up by a couple of good signings.
The World Cup, I mean, I'm sure this is something you've been watching since a kid, like, and there's probably a good chance you're going to be going to Japan later in the year. Like, it's how are you kind of feeling that it's this tournament you've been watching for years is kind of finally upon you?
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, just to think that I might have an opportunity to get to play in it would be really, really cool. And yeah, I've loved watching it since I was a kid. So yeah, like, if I'm there, happy days. If I'm not, I'll be pretty disappointed. But yeah, I'll see.
Cool. Cheers.
Sweet.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Okay, great stuff. That was Jack O'Toole from Sports Joe there talking to Jacob Stockdale. Hopefully he has a good summer off and comes back in great form for the 2019 World Cup. We're going back now to Trimby's first ever solo interview that he did with Brian O'Driscoll and Tan Umaga when they were reunited in Dublin ahead of the Ireland All Blacks game. To kind of put their feud to one side and kind of show everybody that they were friends again. So Trimby met up with the two of them. I hope you enjoy some of this interview. It was done, as I said, before Ireland beat the All Blacks at the Aviva Stadium. And there's a little bit of talk here. We start off with talking about Joe Schmidt's future, which we all know now that he's going to be stepping down from Ireland. So Brian was talking about that to Trimby, and it's an interesting listen. Hope you enjoy.
And I really don't know. I really don't know. I met him a few weeks ago and he certainly wasn't giving anything away. I think from...
He met you for an autograph, didn't he?
He did.
He did.
Yeah, he did. That's all. That's the only reason he actually wants to talk to me anymore is because he's told some dinner lady somewhere that he'll no problem getting an autograph signed.
You thought he was going to ask you for advice?
Yeah, it was like, listen, I want you to come in and coach the backs because I've run out of ideas. Yeah. But no, it's kind of a nice bit of chit-chat at the start.
Yeah.
And then it's the inevitable. Uh-huh. It's like, wait for it. I was like, when you're saying goodbye, it's like, maybe it was just a chat. And then, like, because you don't see him walk in with any program or anything. So he hides it somewhere and then he whips it out. And it's like, oh, mate, you wouldn't sign that. And I was like, of course, no problem. And I've already got, I bring a Sharpie with me because I know I'm going to be doing it. So, he wasn't giving anything away then. But the feeling here is, and we've talked a lot, you know, today and understanding the New Zealand psyche as well, the expectation in New Zealand is to win. You know, it's not like, oh, we hope to win the World Cup. It's like you win the World Cup, mm-hmm. and you win the Rugby Championship every year, and one of the super teams should win Super Rugby. Whereas with Joe, when you go into that environment, there's not that much backslapping. There's a lot of downside, and not, you know, there's a good upside, but there's not the same upside that there is here. You know, he wins a World Cup, gets to a World Cup semi-final, maybe even gets to a World Cup, a final or a semi-final, he's still hailed a hero because he's the first coach to have ever done it.
He's Sergio at that stage, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He is. And he's revered in this country as well from what he's done with Leinster, and now subsequently, you know, with Ireland, two championships and a Grand Slam. He's brought two Champions Cups to Leinster. So, like, he can do no wrong, and yet the team continually gets better. He's beaten the All Blacks for the first time ever. So why would you leave that? You were there?
I was there, yeah.
Well done. Yeah. You had a serious defensive game that day. Sorry, you were good in attack too, but particularly good in defense.
All right, fine.
Just take the compliment. Why see the downside to that?
Everything's a slag.
That's nice to have been part of that.
Yeah. No, yeah. It certainly was.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you in Chicago, by any chance?
I was there, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was on a jolly.
On a jolly.
Yeah, yeah. It was the first game that I'd been to as a fan. Yeah. I'd been to some Ireland games in a working capacity, but the first one that I'd gone to. So we kind of just built a lads' weekend around that. So it was class.
It was a great week, wasn't it?
It was a class week because the Cubs won the World Series as well for the first time in like 60 years or something. So we saw the parade and everything that went with that. And then the win, which I think we'd been hoping for a big performance in the Aviva 2 weeks later, so to get it then was a real added bonus.
The 2 weeks later, whenever we played them back,
it was
in Dublin,
then, obviously, there was a lot of history about Chicago and everything moving forward, and just we were.
It was only 2 weeks history. It wasn't a lot of history. Only 2 weeks.
There was 111 years of history and 2 weeks.
Okay, yeah.
And then we came back, and there was something about the way the All Blacks were getting on. There was an intensity, there was they were raging. We were properly underneath their skin. And it was that moment I kind of thought, Ireland are really on New Zealand's radar. And this is something we've never experienced before. We've got them angry. And I remember Israel Dagg going mental, like screaming in our faces when they scored. Fiktoa took Zeebo's head off at one stage. I was going, these boys are up for it. And in a way, What a compliment. Mm. The All Blacks, actually, we register on the radar. We're competing with the All Blacks. We got beat. it was business as usual. but still, we were going, wow. Is that something that's felt in New Zealand?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, we've talked about respect a lot. And, you know, again, we always say we respect our opposition, yet when you defeat the All Blacks, that does get under your skin, because you realise everything back home's got under your skin as well, because obviously you're losing as an All Blacks, not a great thing. And it's the expectation is that you win all the time, and they're just at you, the public, you know, and media and things get in behind you, and it's like it's the end of the world. And and so they realise, we've got to get our stuff together to make sure that, you know, we can right some wrongs and all this kind of stuff. Yet you don't want to be feeling like that, you know, and there's the history thing behind it as well. So it does make you focus a lot more, you know. This is great that you're saying it becomes really intense, because it becomes intense at training. You know, everything lifts another notch from day one. You know, demanding of each other, you know, that's a big thing within, you know, the All Black camp is, are you doing everything you can to make sure you're ready for it? Because you can't be left wanting. You know, you can't go down and go to the movies, or because are you focused? Are you focused? Mm. Yeah, that's what that does. That's what losing does, and even more so to an All Black. That's the extent of it, because you realise what's going to come at us if this happens again, and we don't want that. So, like you say, it does raise the intensity levels, you know, throughout the whole week, and the expectation on us on the players themselves about letting that down. It's probably a great motivator, but sometimes it does kind of hinder you sometimes.
Yeah, there's the All Black brand, I suppose, is, you know, respect, humility, hardworking, all this kind of stuff. Obviously, a lot of talent, all that kind of stuff. And then you just build on that and you just add this competitiveness. And they've been obviously had that with Bledisloe Cup, Australia in the past, England in the past, like the traditional competitors, but now we've got it with Ireland, and just having that level of intensity is just so nice to almost share that with the All Blacks.
We're glad we can share it.
That's
a great thing, we're sharing that.
Thanks for having us.
we're here for the long haul.
Keep us
in a job.
But also, I think it just raises that awareness of what it takes. I think with everything, with what the players are delivering now, and obviously with the coaching staff, as we've talked about, that intensity from an outside, and what I can sense and what I've heard about Joe, what he brings to training, talking to some of the players, you don't want to stuff it up.
Because it's unpleasant. Time. Do you remember one of my first encounters?
I'm glad you brought it up. I was just about to. Oh God, yeah. I don't know, because I don't know if you and Joe would have hit it off.
Not
brilliantly
right at the start.
Yeah. But a bit of this, boom.
Best friends by the end.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Well, certainly on my part anyway.
Okay. I don't know if he talked as glowingly about the relationship.
That's fair enough.
But yeah, it was. I remember that five-person drill and the sequence. Past, you not remember that one?
Oh,
and
I'm actually thinking of another one.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, but I remember seeing panic of not really understanding, because he's not brilliant. He'll explain something once, you get it immediately.
Yeah.
And like new lads coming into drills are like, oh, sorry, what was that? And then, so you have a second to actually get what the drill is and to work it out. But I think my recollection of you was it took you longer than a second. Trims is quite sharp, but not on this particular drill.
But not sharp enough.
No. And you were berated with the twice. And it's seeing the flummoxed look is quite entertaining.
Which then I went on to see in a lot of other young fellas through and thought, well, I've been there and look where I am now.
What was your mind that you remember?
We were debating, which obviously is a bad way to start, with Joe, what my line should be. Do you remember this one?
Yeah. No, any level of debating, unless you are locked and loaded.
Yeah, and it wasn't.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And I said, well, what about this? And he said, no. And then stupidly, I said, well, could it not, whatever it was. And he said, well, I disagree completely. And it was conversation over. And then I went, okay, right, well, he hates me. Okay, kidney hated me. Now Joe hates me, right? So, right. And then after the session, you said to me, obviously you know him well, and you said, see, that conversation you were having with Joe there, don't do that. You know what's good for you? Don't ever do that. And I never did it again.
Thank you, you're welcome. That sounds like it's a major negative, but because the great thing is it's not, he doesn't reserve it for new players or for particular individuals, it's for everyone. Mm-hmm. Where if you want to challenge something, you really have to know, because he's such a clear philosophy as to how he wants things done, and mm-hmm. and he's been proven right so often that it's hard to argue that. So if you do come with a challenge of some sort, it would want to be a very, very good one.
Absolutely.
Or something that kind of has caught him in some way. It's like that, he's that teacher in school that asks a question and the pupil gives an answer and it's not really close to what he was thinking, and he's not the teacher that goes, yeah, I really like that one, really like it, but anyone else? He goes, no, I'm on to somebody else.
No,
it's like,
very
bang,
clear.
It's cut and dry, yeah.
There's no gray area.
I think that's everybody else is clear. Every other player in the room knows, don't ask that question or don't give that stupid answer. Mm. And if you're going to come with something, you best have researched it, because he'll have researched it. But anyway, fellas, we've run out of time.
That's it.
Yeah.
I think it's gone well.
I think it's gone
very well. Brilliant.
I think you've put Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on the map in Auckland and Northern Ireland. Thanks a lot,
excellent.
Fellas.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.